Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Your Everyday Cyber Podcast with Limor Kesem and Diana Kelly. We live in a cyberspace almost all the time, but do we know enough about living in it securely? Join this dynamic duo as they take you through an exploration of daily cyber activities and how you can make better choices to make them secure for yourself and your family. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Welcome to Your Everyday Cyber. I'm Limor Kesem, a cybersecurity professional and advisor. My co-host is Diana Kelly, a cybersecurity expert who is the CTO and co-founder of Security Curve. Cyber warriors in the military keep our countries and citizens safe. Some experts opt to stay in the military for their entire career, and others may eventually choose to move into the private sector to continue to develop their career in other directions.
I know. What's exciting is that our guest today has done both. Jack Scott began her career with the U.S. Army Special Force back in 2011 and worked both the private sector and the military on and off. And today she's employed full-time as the Director of Threat Intelligence for Prevalient, but she continues her service as a Cyber Threat Intel Lead Warrant Officer for the U.S. National Guard. I mean, what an amazing career, and no one better to tell us more about the differences between these two sectors and what it takes to switch direction.
Definitely. Jax, welcome to the show.
Ladies, thank you. Diana, Limor, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm very passionate about this topic, so I was really excited when you both had asked me to come onto the show.
Definitely. We're excited to have you as well.
Yeah.
Jax, you started your career in the Army Special Forces as a cultural support leader in Afghanistan. So what does a cultural support leader do, and what was it like working in Afghanistan?
Yeah, this is such a great question and something I'm yet again very passionate about. What led me into the special ops, and prior to the special ops, I was in what we call the conventional army doing information technology for big army. And what we call it the CST program, cultural support team program. What it was is in 2010, there was a need for getting information off of the women and children in the Middle Eastern countries. And why this was important is because according to their culture, unless you are married to that woman or in that village or in that family, you're not allowed to speak to the women of that village. And so there was an information gap. And as we know in the intel sector, information becomes intelligence. And so our intelligence picture was lacking. And they being the Special Operations Command, came up with an idea to create a training pipeline, do a selection process, and recruit women to be part of the CST program. And the idea was to create a two-man team where you had two women, usually it was an officer and an enlisted, and you went forward and deployed into primarily Afghanistan, and you would have one interpreter with you, and you would embed into the special operations team, and you would work with them to gather information and talk with the women and children. And we did this in a myriad of ways. We wouldn't just go in and immediately start trying to get information off of them. We actually would hold either medical clinics or medical training programs, or we would do what we would call ASHURAs, big meetings to take in their concerns within the village. Maybe they needed a well, maybe they needed more schooling or more books. And then through that rapport, we would then start getting information off of them. I wrote a white paper about this program back in 2015, and I saw about a 25% increase for successes within operations and missions simply by having one or two of these female operators embedded with the special operations teams when they would go into the villages. It was really amazing. This was even before Congress had approved women to be officially in combat roles. So it was a big deal at that time. It was right around, I was part of the program between 2011 and 2013.
Wow. I mean, that's amazing. Just that coming up with the idea and building that trust, that's incredible. And that it made such a big difference. It's really just, wow. so You mentioned that you did it until 2013. In 2014, you became an electronic warfare officer. Was that a big leap? And is that a pivot into cybersecurity? And if so, how did you manage that?
Yeah, that it was a leap. And that's why I prefaced when I started this story by saying before I pivoted into going into the special ops as this cultural support team leader, I was information technology, which is different than electronic warfare, but I'll explain how those realign to get me to where I'm at today, because it's very interesting. So before going into the CST program, I was doing information technology, IT work for the military. We called it the G6, which is the department we have for anything like IT, computers, anything like that. And cyber kind of falls into that area as well. And back then, cyber wasn't a thing. This was in 2008, 2009, when I went into the sector. And I was doing SharePoint and help desk. And I was also on, when we would do operations, I would be that person that would go out, lead the teams to lay down Cat5 cables, create entire infrastructures out of scratch in the middle of nowhere, usually putting up a big tent. So honestly, I hated my life. I did not realize that there were other things out there in the IT sector. I thought that was it, was going to be doing help desk and SharePoint for the rest of my life. So when the CST thing came up, I just was 100% headfirst into it. I really enjoyed it. And I started seeing the intelligence side of things. And that's where I really started loving the military more. I really wanted to stay in intel. But then when I came back from active duty and I went back into the Colorado Guard at that time, that was around 2013, I was actually wanting to transfer into Intel and I got recruited to be part of this new branch and it was called electronic warfare as a warrant officer, actually. So before I even decided to submit my packet for warrant school, I started trying to talk to other warrants that were electronic warfare officers. But it was such a new branch. I could not find a single person that, at least within my circle and the sphere of influence within the warrants, that had been a warrant for long enough in electronic warfare to tell me what we were actually going to be doing. So I did a ton of research, and there's a lot of data about electronic warfare from the Navy, because that's where it actually originated from on the military side, was the Navy branch. And so I got a lot of information from there and I said, you know what, this is pretty good. This will get me out of IT. And it still goes into understanding physics, and you're learning about signal intelligence and things like that. So I fast forward, I decided, okay, I'm going to submit my packet. I submitted it and I was accepted into the program. That was in 13. Now, fast forward a couple of years, the military did this really interesting transition to where we're at today. And there was this pivotal point right in 2015, which took electronic warfare and put us under cyber command, under the cyber branch. Mm-hmm. So I literally, even my nomenclature, the number, I think it was a 160, 169. I'm now a 170. And as a cyber officer, it's a 170. So I'm a 170 Bravo, but the cyber warrants are 170 Alphas. But before that, we were in a completely different numeric structure. But then they were like, all right, you guys are moving into cyber. I'm just letting you know, I was dreading it. I thought, great, I'm going back to SharePoint and I'm going back to help desk again. Wow. I had no idea that cyber was going to be my new love and my passion, and that I could also take the skills that I learned in intelligence and understanding that framework, and that there would be a branch called Cyber Threat Intel, which is where I've postured myself today. So it's been a wild and very, very unconventional ride for myself.
That's amazing. I found it super interesting. And I'm guessing, you know, you just said that cyber became like your new passion and love, which I totally connect with. And in 2016, you started working for a consulting company while still keeping a role in the Army. So is that what made you branch off kind of to the private sector? And also, what was it like working for both at the same time?
Yeah, that was an interesting time in my life. So in 2016, what I decided to do is I decided to work for a consulting company while also launching my own defense contracting firm. And it was very rewarding, very stressful, and very hard. It was a lot of hard work. And the reason I had created this consulting company or this intelligence company is because I saw the need for female operators because of the impact that we had in the battle space in the Middle East. I said, why not have an organization that offers the same type of capabilities as a defense contracting company here in the United States? And it was a solid mission and vision. However, it was still at a time that women-owned, women-operated, women operators as a whole was just not, it wasn't, they weren't fully accepted into the defense space as female operators coming in. You see them more prevalent now. And there's actually, I think, the first female company that ever got a special operations subcontract was in, don't quote me on this, but it was right around 2017 or 18. And they had been around for quite a long time. So they had the past performance where my company was still very, very young, very little past performance. So the likelihood of landing something like that was going to be very hard. But I learned a lot through that. I took a lot of the skills that I had learned through my time of being deployed, but also working and being part of the training pipeline within the special forces. And I transferred that into running my company. And I also, while running my company full time, was still what we call an M-Day soldier, which is the 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year. And I was still doing that, but at that time I was doing it for the National Guard Special Forces Unit. And I was full-time electronic warfare with a dash of cyber. So it was a lot of balancing during that time of my life. 15 to 18 was a really interesting time in my life for sure. Balancing a lot of stuff. I think that's when I really honestly figured out where I wanted to go and kind of the direction I wanted to take my career at that time, but I had to try all these things to figure it out.
Yeah, it's not uncommon. And for anybody that's thinking of changing careers, you know, I think it's great to hear that it's not that you were born and you said, I'm going to be this threat intel guru, that it's something that you discovered. And that's how a lot of us find where we work. And then we may change within a few years, even in one area. When you were working at FireEye, you know, you'd been working for the Army, you know, as an intel officer, you got to see a lot of activity. I'm sure that, you know, to your point, people in help desks are not seeing. Was that hard as you were, you know, going to FireEye after you've been working on electronic warfare? Did your vantage point differ from the rest of the team? Do you think it helped, hurt, or just it was a different lens?
That I love this question because there's so many layers to it. And I want to try to break it down for the listeners, because this is a very crucial point for listeners to understand how it is to be a military person going into the corporate world. Cause FireEye was my first, and I'm using air quotes, you can't see me, but it was my first corporate job. Before that, I'd ran my own company, and any other jobs that I had was working with other special operations guys running their defense contracting firm. So I'd never been in a fully civilian environment, and I had not worked for a private sector. I had been public sector majority of my life. And so right before I actually, just a little backstory on that, to understand the context around FireEye and that whole dynamic, in 2019, for the majority of that year, I was actually supporting a mission called Atlantic Resolve with 10th Special Forces Group, which is a mission set in Eastern Europe or out in Europe, but a lot of mine was focused in Eastern Europe. And I was working with host nation partners, and I was helping develop. So I wouldn't say develop, but I was working around and assisting our host nations with their cyber operations. And I was seeing at that time how we had a major disconnect between the private and the public sector. I was not aware at that time that this disconnect even was even a thing. But then I realized, wow, our permissions and our authorities are so skewed. It is making it extremely difficult to be impactful on the front lines for cyber war. And so that was when my passion for understanding cyber law, cyber policy, public-private partnerships, what that looked like. And then fast forward at the very end of 2019, I was afforded an opportunity to work for FireEye as their senior analyst. And my client set, I was on a special project. So my client set was still somewhat in Europe. And it was very interesting because I saw myself integrating very easily and quickly into it, but that was not the case. Full transparency, it was very challenging for me. It was going from the public sector into a private sector environment. FireEye is a great company. I loved my team. I loved the mission set. I loved what I was doing. I brought a lot of my skill sets over into that sector, which helped me a ton. But there was a challenge with communication. That was a big thing. I started realizing that there is a communication gap between civilians and military or individuals that worked on the DoD side. I can tell you that being at FireEye was very rewarding. It taught me a lot of things that it was hard, but it taught me a lot of things that I need to work on. And it was because of FireEye that I started my own blog, because I wanted to create a way for me to help refine my technical writing skills and just become better technically as a cyber threat intel analyst. All of these things that I started seeing a weakness in, I just started developing out, and it was because of FireEye. And because of that company, I co-authored a book. I mean, my blog then led me into writing a book, then creating the podcast. And then from there, I was able to pivot into my second job, which was the CTI lead at Capital One in the Fusion Center. And I helped them build out their Fusion Center from the ground up. And I honestly don't think I could have been successful with that position had I not been given the opportunity and had the experience that I was given at FireEye. So I think you can learn from any position you go into, no matter how good or bad it is. But I think you can really grow from those positions that really challenge you and are sometimes really, I call it sticky. And you're just there and you're really sticky. And FireEye was a really sticky point for me, but it was my transition point.
That's amazing. And I totally relate to that. I find that, you know, you can find periods like that and you can be in jobs that might feel like in situations like that. And I think it's important also for people to understand that. You truly do a ton of stuff that I think is quite clear for all of us. And I'm just wondering, how do you find the time or what strategies you have to balance the demands of a full-time job that you have and your commitment to the National Guard that you work with right now?
Yeah, Lamore, this is something I work on daily. Time blocking, first thing, we were talking about it before we hit record, and I told you that typically I start my day right around 9:30. But I do not take meetings before 9 a.m. typically. Typically, my 9 a.m. time, I will work out, I get up, I have a routine, I get up by about 6:30. I almost every day during the week, Monday through Friday, I go and I work out and I get my mind right. I get back around 8:30. And while I'm showering, depending on the day and how I feel, most of the time I listen to a podcast to try to get my daily ingest in. And then I sit down at my desk by about 8:45-ish. I start going through my emails, my OSINT, all scraping. And then by about 9:30, I start my day. But it's from that point on, I can be a little flexible in the morning, but from that point on, my entire calendar is time blocked out with even like 15-minute breaks to step away from my computer. Because one thing about my personality is when I get into something, I will dive head first and I will not take any breaks at all and nothing. I will work 7 days a week. I will work 16 hours a day. And the older I have gotten, the more I'm like, man, I hit that 10-hour mark and I'm tired. And I hit that fifth day, Friday, and I'm exhausted. And I've had to be okay with accepting where I'm at and realizing I'm not going to always be the smartest person in the room. That's another thing I've had to learn. It's just this industry. And then just be okay at where I'm at and trust the process and give yourself breaks. And I am not perfect at it by any means. There's still times that I catch myself when I'm about to burn out And I am still not the best at taking breaks. And I know that. I was just talking about this yesterday with somebody. I need to learn how to bring fun back into my day-to-day life and enjoy the journey. And I'm having fun, but I know that I'm still working myself too much. But I just keep telling myself I'm better than I was yesterday. So if anybody's out there and they're having those challenges, I would just say, give yourself grace, take micro breaks, take some time off and time block and make sure that you're giving back to yourself.
Such good advice. Yeah. The ability to give yourself grace is so hard, but so important. And I, like you, Jax, I do the workout in the morning. It gets me right for the day. And I know that I've done it, and it's just such a good way to start off. So, well, given all you do, you also have a little extra time because you donate your time as a board member to the nonprofit Special Operations Association of America. I was wondering if you could share with the listeners a little bit about that organization's mission.
I love SOA. So glad that you brought this up. So SOA.org, definitely go check it out. Special Operations of America. I was recruited by the founder, Daniel Elkins, and he had brought me on because they needed some diversity. And, you know, majority of SF is men. And he reached out to me and we actually met by happenstance while I was working at FireEye. And he said, I'd really like to have you on the board. You're the only woman that I know that's not only worked in soft, but actually has combat experience. And I'd like to have your insights. And I am passionate about this organization because it is an advocacy program, an advocacy foundation for special operations, both male and female operators, to help us at the congressional level. And there is nothing like this, but there's other special operations foundations out there. And a lot of times they're designed to help with giving back to the soldier and the soldier's family, should they be deceased or they need help with housing or education or anything. But there's no foundation that actually supports the soldiers at the congressional level. And why that's important is there are a lot of challenges as women, and I'm speaking from the women perspective, and my role on the SOA board is I am that voice for a lot of women that have served in the Special Operations Command, but are not receiving the same support that our male colleagues are. And one example of that is we will come back from combat and we will be seen from a medical facility, say the VA, for example, and we will be discounted for our injuries because we are a woman. And that is extremely frustrating. I am battling a lot of these things actually myself. And I'm not the only story. I was just talking to another CST the other day about this. And there is a program that I'm putting together, a project actually is a better way of saying it. I'm putting a project together right now to tell some stories of women who are having similar challenges, to present these forward to the congressional level so we can start seeing changes, either providing us a different resource through the VA if we've served in the special ops, or creating a new foundation specifically for women in the special ops. I don't know what that's going to look like yet, but I will tell you, I have been overwhelmed by how many women want to come forward and tell their story, and I don't have the bandwidth. So I'm having to actually only take 3 to 5 women's story right now and develop those out to present those forward. And so it's a great foundation where it's still progressing forward right now, but it's amazing. It's something of many things that I'm extremely passionate about.
Well, thank you so much, Jax, for taking the time and sharing this inspiring advice, your path with us. For our audience, if you wish to hear more from Jax, she hosts a podcast called Hackers and Hackson on ITSB Radio. Jax, this is awesome. I love your podcast for once.
Yeah, big fans.
Oh my God, I love you, Lace. Thank you.
And thanking our listeners as well today for being with us. I hope that this episode was helpful to you and it will entice you to learn more and maybe even look into ways of moving your skills to the military or the private sector, maybe both. Please follow the podcast and get involved. You can reach out to us on Twitter at @cyber_everyday or LinkedIn if you wish to send us some questions in advance or suggest topics for upcoming episodes. And you can email us at youreverydaycyber@securitycurve.com. Our podcast page has more details for you and the resources from each episode, including information about cybersecurity in the U.S. military and about JAX. So thank you everyone for tuning in and stay safe out there.
Thank you, Lamora. Thank you, Diana.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Your Everyday Cyber Podcast with Limor and Diana. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.